This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hey, very good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Jeremy Sampson from WILX-TV in for Earl Robinson today. We will be with you until 2 o'clock here talking sports. Actually, a very busy day on this Friday in mid-Michigan. If you'd like to get involved in today's program, you can do so by dialing 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or reach us toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. We do have a couple of special guests coming up on today's program, but as I mentioned in the open just moments ago, we have some breaking news concerning the Michigan State basketball program. I just left the Breslin Center about 20 minutes ago as Tom Izzo was meeting with the media prior to Michigan State's opening game in the Big Ten on New Year's Eve against Minnesota in Minneapolis. But Coach Izzo announcing today that sophomore guard Brandon Kearney will be transferring from the program. Kearney came back from Christmas break and sat down and talked to Tom Izzo. And at that time, he voiced his displeasure with his role on the team and thought it would be better for him to end his college career or at least continue it at another locale. Now, we're talking about a player who was playing 17 minutes a game, which, as Tom Izzo said, you know, this decision really shocked him. It came as a huge surprise that Kearney decided to leave the program. And, you know, when guys say they're not happy with their role, 99 times out of 100, and this has got to be that one exception, it spurs from playing time. But you're talking about a young man who was coming off the bench, again, was getting 17 minutes a game, I think had an opportunity to expand that role even farther, if need be, toward the end of the year here. As we know, Tom Izzo shortens up his bench a little bit, but Kearney was definitely in the playing rotation, but decided, again, that the role that he had with the team was just not to his liking, so he has decided to transfer. Tom Izzo said there are no hard feelings either way. It wasn't anything that Kearney did, wasn't anything that Michigan State did. It was just a matter of Kearney wanting another opportunity or a little bit more opportunity to do something somewhere else. So, again, Brandon Kearney, sophomore guard, transferring from the Michigan State basketball program. We will talk a little bit more about that coming up a little bit later in today's show. In fact, well, we may touch on that a little bit with our first guest as well, but we want to welcome in columnist for MSUSpartans.com and a veteran Michigan State writer here in this area, Steve Grinzel. He is in Tempe, Arizona, getting ready for the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. Good afternoon, Steve. How are you?
I'm good, Jeremy. How are you?
I guess it's morning there still, but first question, I don't know if you'd heard the news about Brandon Kearney or maybe you're just hearing it for the first time. As I mentioned, Tom Izzo just met with the media about 20 minutes ago. Are you surprised, as we all were, when Coach Izzo let us know that Kearney's leaving the team?
Yeah, I guess I'm pretty surprised that someone like Kim, who seemed to have carved out a little nice little niche for himself, would be disenchanted with his role. So, you know, it's not like he was the leading scorer or he was the last guy on the bench or anything like that. And, you know, I don't know what more he could have given them than what he was. He certainly filled a key role for him as kind of a do-it-all performer.
Well, that's why I think this decision kind of caught Tom Izzo off guard, as he mentioned, and Derek Nix even mentioned to us. You know, usually guys want to transfer because they're not getting any playing time, but we're talking about a guy who's playing 17 minutes a game, and I think because of his defense, would have seen maybe some increased minutes as you get farther into the Big Ten schedule and farther into March because of the way that he could play defense. So I guess the next question is now, where does Michigan State go from here? As you mentioned, he's not the leading scorer, but he did fill a role, so it hurts a little bit of the depth there coming off the bench. It's going to open up roles for maybe a guy like Russell Byrd, who you know, we've talked about on this program here before, and there's been extensive conversations about Russell and his play. He had those multiple surgeries on his foot. Looks like he needs a little confidence, shot the ball very well in the part of practice that we were able to see today. But, Steve, going forward, how do you see Kearney's exit maybe affecting the playing group, rotation, and where Tom Izzo kind of goes from here?
Well, certainly it closes up the playing group a little bit, which Tom had been struggling with, you know, how many players to play, 9, 10, 11 sometimes, 12. So it kind of solves that problem a little bit. On the one hand, you know, Kearney's ability to defend it was his calling card, because if you can defend, you can get on the floor for Michigan State a lot easier than you can if you're more of a scoring option. And, I saw him filling the role that Austin Thornton kind of filled the previous few years. Tim Bogracus, certainly not as good of a scorer as Kearney could be, did it in the, you know, a little more distant past. Just that guy that can come in, give you some hard minutes, make some things happen, get to some loose balls, get on a little scoring spurt here and there, and still defend. I don't see Bird as that type of player. Certainly there's 17 more minutes to go around, and if he's ever going to take advantage of an opportunity, this would be the time for him to do it. Beyond that, I'm not sure they have another player like Kearney that could take up those minutes. I think it just means they'll be distributed a little bit more among the key players in the playing group.
Steve Grinzel, columnist at MSUSpartans.com, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk on AM 870. WKAR. Steve, let's shift our focus now to football. Again, you're out in Tempe with the team. What's the weather been like? First of all, the forecasts that I've seen have been a little bit chilly. I mean, it's all relative. It's 20 degrees here today, so chilly is all relative. But what's the weather been like, and how's the team been practicing here leading up to the game tomorrow night?
Well, basically, it's been beautiful football weather. It's been in the mid-50s, low-60s to the mid-60s the first day, and the other day it hit it again into the mid-60s. When the sun's shining, it's very comfortable, very pleasant. Feels like a fall afternoon in Spartan Stadium. So from a football standpoint, you couldn't ask for better weather. For the people who thought they were going to go swimming in the pool and do those kinds of things, maybe a little chilly, but hasn't stopped anybody from playing golf. I see players on the golf course all the time, so... all in all, it's kind of gorgeous out here.
Well, what's the preparation been like for the team as they get ready? I think, the one thing about bowl games that can be tricky is how do you kind of, around the holidays, when do you leave? When do you give the guys a break? This game happens to fall on a Saturday, so you can kind of keep a little bit of the game week routine the same because you are playing on a Saturday night. But what's the preparation been like for Michigan State here the last couple of days?
From my vantage point, which it's always from afar, I say, because you're certainly not in every huddle. You're not on the field. You're off to the side. But they look like a fresh team. They look energetic, and they look into it. They look like they're happy to be here. So. From that standpoint, I think they're in a good frame of mind. Practices, the little bit that I've seen, have been crisp and energetic. And, I think the team's having a good time out here. So if you got happy players, I think that's a good sign for the bowl. If you had a bunch of grouches out here.
Yeah. Well, we've seen that. We've seen that in a couple of bowl games already where we've had teams that were highly favored, 10 or 14 points, just come out and look like in no way, shape, or form did they want to be on that football field. It just looked like they had no interest in being there. And I think that's the one thing that's so hard to gauge in a lot of these bowl games, and especially when you get in games that have teams that feature, squads with 6-6 records or 7-5 records. It's how badly does that team really want to be there? How badly do they really want to kind of play this game? But you get a sense from the Michigan State practices and such that they really want to finish this season strong, certainly, and go out with a winning record.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the bowl season is maybe the most fickle thing in all of college sports anyway, because it's, you know, there are letdowns if you didn't have the season you wanted to have, or you're not going to the bowl you thought you should be in, and, you know, 100 other different factors that come into it. You know, we've seen that with Michigan State teams of the past. I don't think any of D'Antonio's teams have ever been in that situation. I think they've been competitive and in every bowl but one. And defense coordinator Pat Narduzzi said the other day, was that where Michigan State was at that time in their progress of the program, and where Alabama was at relatively at the same time in their progress. I think they still tried to play hard in that game. I just think it was a mismatch. But I think D'Antonio's teams have all come to play, and I think that's a kind of a trademark. Even through the seasons when they've had a really tough loss, they almost always bounce back. And if they've had a really good win, they've almost never gotten complacent or come out flat the next game either. So, you know, I think it's kind of a philosophy that the team's bought into, and I just don't see this team laying an egg in this bowl like some of the teams we've seen so far this bowl season.
Steve Grinzell, columnist for MSUSpartans.com, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR. Steve, there was a huge competition the other night to see which team could eat more wings, and Michigan State won that competition easily. My question is, was there a similar competition for the media? And if so, who won that competition? Or who would have won if they didn't include the media? And if they didn't, that's a shame, by the way.
Oh, I'd probably give that one to Joe Rexroth. There wasn't a competition that I know. I wasn't involved in one. But I'd give it to Joe Rexroth. I think he could probably, from the Detroit Free Press, I think he could probably wolf down some wings. But, you know, I think that's a Michigan State tradition. I remember in 87 that the Spartans trounced USC for in the Lowry's Beef Bowl by eating, 2,000 pounds of prime rib compared to 1,500 pounds or some ridiculous number.
Yeah, there's always some kind of eating competition in any of these bowl games. But when B-Dubs is the title sponsor, you know, it's buffalo chips and cheese. You don't need that. You just need the wings. And that was some good video of those guys attacking that. No Johnny Adams for Michigan State in this bowl game for Michigan State. How do you see that affecting the MSU defense against a team like TCU that likes to spread you out, and here you are missing your top cornerback?
Well, I wrote about that today on MSUSpartans.com on the Grins on Green blog. TCU is a spread, but they actually run a little more than they pass. So it's going to be more about playing in space than necessarily having to deal with a gazillion passes in the air. A lot of dink and dunk kind of throwing and those kinds of things. How it affects it, I don't know. I think I'm anxious to see Trey Waynes play a little bit. I think he's going to get an opportunity to kind of show us what things are going to look like next year. The reports on him from the other players are all very good. They're all very high on him and, say that they shouldn't miss a beat with him in there. So, the players know better than anybody, and, I'm sure they wouldn't be saying the opposite. They wouldn't be coming out and saying, we're on the brink of disaster here because Johnny's gone. But
right.
By the same token, I think they're very confident in all the guys. And Coach Barnett, the defensive backfield coach, also says, the young guys coming up are, high-grade talent. So, I'm kind of excited to see that. And sorry for Johnny that just can't get healthy enough to finish out.
Yeah, that's a tough deal for him because it is his senior year and it would have been his last game in a Michigan State uniform. And he had kind of an up-and-down career, but we saw early on his freshman year some bright spots, and then he redshirted, and then certainly was a stalwart in the Michigan State secondary throughout the rest of his career, which obviously ended up in Minneapolis against the Gophers. All right, before we let you go, Steve, give me one or two things that the Spartans will need to do in order to get a win tomorrow night?
Well, I think the primary thing is they need to get the running game going and blow a TCU off the ball, because I think, you know, TCU is coming in with a big reputation for being the best run defense in the Big 12. And if Michigan State can move the ball on them, I think that'll be something that could affect their confidence and open things up for Michigan State. And scoring touchdowns in the red zone. They've been there a bunch of times, but their touchdown production from the red zone is just way down from last year. And, you know, they can't settle for field goals. So when they have opportunities in the red zone, they got to cash in with touchdowns.
Well, Steve, we appreciate a couple minutes. We'll let you get back to the fun and sun out there in Tempe. Look forward to reading a preview, I'm sure, on today on MSUSpartans.com, and then all your coverage after the game of the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl as Michigan State gets ready to take on TCU. Again, thanks for a couple minutes, and have a good time at the game.
All right, Jeremy, Happy New Year.
All right, Steve, Happy New Year to you too. Steve Grinzel, columnist at MSUSpartans.com, sharing a couple thoughts with us here as Michigan State gets ready to tangle with TCU in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl tomorrow night. All right, stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870.
We have found the secret to the perfect pie crust, and boy, are you going to be surprised. I'm Ira Plato. It's our holiday food extravaganza on Science Friday. We'll talk with America's Test Kitchen chef, Jack Bishop, on the science of good cooking and how to get the biggest bang out of your bubbly. That's all on Science Friday from NPR.
All right, that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Thanks for tuning in today. Here's the weather forecast for the weekend. A winter weather advisory is in effect until 6 a.m. Saturday, and we're expecting around an inch of snow today with a high around 29. An inch or less of snow tonight with lows in the lower 20s. Cloudy with a chance of light snow on Saturday with highs in the 20s. Partly sunny on Sunday with highs in the 20s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Jeremy Sampson in for Earl Robinson today. It's 1:23 here on this Friday. It's the final week, final day of the week here on Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR. And of course, as we mentioned off the top of today's program, some breaking news out of the Michigan State basketball program. As sophomore guard Brandon Kearney has decided to leave the team and informed Tom Izzo after he came back from winter break that he was not happy with his role on the team and wanted to transfer. Coach Tom Izzo explaining to the media about 45 minutes ago that he was about as surprised as he's ever been in his career at hearing that decision. And, you know, that certainly came as a big shock to him. And but he said there was no hard feelings, and certainly he wouldn't stop Brandon from transferring to any program that he felt was necessary. Again, Kearney was playing 17 minutes a game, and Michigan State will have to find a way to replace some of those minutes, and they will certainly do so here coming up over the next couple of weeks. Again, they begin their Big Ten schedule on New Year's Eve at Minneapolis against the Gophers. Let's go back out to our guest line. We want to welcome in Nate Ewell, who is the Director of Communications for College Hockey Incorporated. Of course, we have a big college hockey tournament in these parts beginning on Saturday and ending on Sunday, the Great Lakes Invitational, Michigan, Michigan State, Western, and, of course, you've got the host, Michigan Tech. But, Nate, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm great, Jeremy. How you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you again. Happy holidays. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since then, so I hope everything's going well and hope Santa Claus was good to you.
Very good. Very good. Very good holidays around here. Got a little bit of a cold, but it sounds like that's going around with Earl as well. So hopefully good health to come in the new year.
You got it. Hey, what are you looking for when you watch this this Great Lakes Invitational field this year? Of course, it was scheduled to be played outdoors, was going to take place at Comerica Park because of the NHL lockout. The Winter Classic, of course, was going to be at Michigan Stadium between the Maple Leafs and Red Wings. All that got wiped out. out. So in a way, it kind of, downgrades things, I guess, a little bit as you go back to Joe Louis Arena. But as you know from being around here for many years, the GLI is a special, special tournament and should be some good hockey, I guess, this weekend as well.
Yeah, it is. It is disappointing, but I've got to think that people around there too are excited to get some hockey in the Joe.
That's true. There hasn't been a lot this fall.
No, the way the NHL is going, you know, it's got to be nice to have some high level competition in there. And the interesting thing about this tournament is that it's the outsider Michigan or Western Michigan that's probably the favorite going in the way they've been playing.
And that, usually there's a team from outside, you know, the CCHA. You've always got Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan Tech. And usually that fourth team is a team from the East Coast. Sometimes teams are brought in from the WCHA. But this year you have another CCHA team. So you've got pretty much, three teams from the same conference and then Michigan Tech. But all teams pretty much familiar with themselves. Michigan has been a little bit of a conundrum this year. I mean, their defense and their goaltending has been probably the most frustrating this season that it's ever been, don't you think, in the Red Berenson era?
Yeah, it's been really surprising. I mean, I guess you didn't know what to expect from the goaltending, but their defense core looked to be as good as any in the country. And they're going to be decimated this weekend because not only is John Merrill still hurt, but they have Jacob Trouba over at the World Junior Championship. So they're going to be looking at a sort of a patchwork defense, and it's been a tough go in the first half for the Wolverines.
How about when you look at Michigan State? They got a nice win before break to kind of – And when Tom Manassas talked about that, he talked about needing a win to really kind of catapult this team into the GLI and also kind of looking at the second half of their season here as we begin the new year. But this has been a team with a lot of new faces this year, a lot of younger players, and really they haven't played, certainly I don't think, their best hockey to date.
I got to think that this weekend shapes up pretty well from Tom's perspective because, other than that first weekend in Minnesota, this team's been in every game. Seems like, and they've played well. They've come a long way, I think, from where they started. And as you said, it's a lot of young players. So they've got guys playing big roles that haven't in the past, or newcomers, freshmen that have stepped in. So they've got a real chance here, I think, to step up and make a statement this weekend going into the second half.
Nate Ewell, Communications Director for College Hockey Incorporated, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR. And for those of you who have not heard of College Hockey Incorporated before, really it is an arm of the different conferences around the country and somebody, an organization who's really trying to get the word out about college hockey, let players know the benefits of playing college hockey versus, maybe going to Canada and playing in major juniors and that. But Nate, if you can just kind of fill us in a little bit on your endeavors there with College Hockey Incorporated and kind of how the game is evolving here and maybe how your efforts are maybe helping to grow the game here a little bit, or at least it has been here over the past couple of years.
Sure. Our group is about 3 years old, just over 3 years old now. And as you said, we're really trying to focus on exposing young players to the benefits of playing college hockey. And that takes a number of different forms. A lot of it is done in growing non-traditional hockey areas like California and Arizona and places where we have players playing that there aren't necessarily college teams, so they don't get that firsthand experience. But a lot of it takes place in places like Michigan, too. We actually, because of the proximity to the OHL, we lose more American players from the state of Michigan than any other state in the country to the Canadian Hockey League. So we try to focus on retaining as many of those players as we can, or at least making sure that they know the college opportunities that are available for them before they sign a letter or sign a contract that could prohibit them from taking advantage of an NCAA opportunity down the road.
And how difficult has the venture been? I mean, you've been in college hockey for many years. You worked in the NHL for many years. Coming after you left the NHL and kind of coming back to college hockey, I think people always kind of look at a new position and what they might be doing. But has it been a little bit harder, do you think, a little bit easier? What have been some of the big challenges for you as you mentioned now entering year number three here?
I think a couple of the different challenges that have presented themselves. One is just establishing the entity and making sure that people know who you are, so you can open a door at a rink and talk to a group of parents, and they're not asking, wait, so what are you trying to sell here? We're a nonprofit, so we don't actually sell anything. We're not looking for money. We're selling the experience of college hockey. Certainly after the first year or two that we were able to get our name established, it's making sure that we're getting in front of the right people and getting in front of them multiple times so that they have the information that they need and have the confidence that, you know, they know what college hockey offers and know what they can look forward to. One of the things, you know, college hockey, unlike basketball, unlike football, you know, the case at Michigan State, for example, the basketball player transferring. In hockey, you don't see many transfers because hockey players will leave school and go jump to the Canadian Hockey League. There's another option. There aren't those routes in football and basketball. So we're fighting a little bit of a different animal, where we're fighting outside of the NCAA bylaws, and Canadian Hockey League teams can call these kids over and over and send moms flowers and things like that NCAA schools can't quite do. And we just try to kind of stay in stride with them and make sure that we get the information in people's hands when they need it.
Isn't that difficult, though, when you look at the different set of rules for, you know, one league or another, that you guys are kind of really fighting an uphill battle at times with what you can do with some of those NCAA restrictions?
It is, but they're there for a reason, too. I mean, you know, one of the issues for our coaches is that they can't contact players before their the end of their sophomore year of high school. And some of these kids are being drafted by junior teams when they're freshmen or sophomores. So they're already in contact, obviously, with the junior programs. And a lot of these kids don't understand, well, how come, you know, if college really is interested in me, how come they haven't reached out to me? Well, they can't. So that's where we come in. We actually can reach out to those kids in advance. And what we need to do a good job of is identifying those kids and making sure that we get to them and they understand kind of the situation that our coaches are in, and they need to know too that they can reach out to coaches at any time. So if you're a kid in the Lansing area that's playing hockey and wondering why Tom Anastas hasn't called you up, he may really want to, but he actually can't. And if you drop by Munn, he'd probably be thrilled to see you. You're actually allowed to reach out to him, but not the other way around.
Nate Ewell, Communications Director for College Hockey Incorporated, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk. Nate, before we let you go, we got to talk a little NHL. The two sides had not met here for, I don't think, about 2 weeks, but news coming out just a couple hours ago that it looks like the league has put a new proposal on the table to the Players Association and to the union. And without getting into a lot of the mundane details, and this, you know, I think you need to be a lawyer a lot of times to yeah. try and figure a lot of this stuff out. But there has been some concessions in this latest proposal from the league to the union. In your opinion, looking at what the league has done to kind of give on a couple of key issues, will it be enough to get a deal done, do you think, and save some of this 2012-2013 season?
It sounds like there's some movement, which I think is really positive. And, you know, I think you're dealing with two sides that both are, and this is meant in a good way in a business sense, they're both pretty stubborn. They both want to win.
Yep.
So I think there's going to need to be some give on both sides. And you know, if the owners present this proposal and say, okay, this is what we'd like to see, but maybe we'll give a couple of items here and there off of this, that if you really want to push back, then I could see there really being some traction, and hopefully we'll be having games here by the middle of January.
It's been tough on hockey fans. I mean, you just went through this, 6 years ago, you know, and you're going through this again. And I know a lot of folks have kind of been put off by the league, put off by this, you know, lockout every 6 or 7 years. So as a fan of the game, as disappointed as I've been in what's transpired, and I know you being a fan yourself, I think we'd all like to see the guys back on the ice as soon as possible.
Yeah, as soon as possible. There is some damage, I think, to be fixed here. And
yeah.
Hopefully, sooner the better, especially, you know, these last 2 weeks not having college hockey. It's really been, really hit home.
For sure. Well, Nate, we appreciate a couple of minutes. I know, like Earl, you're a little under the weather, so best wishes to you to getting better. Happy New Year to you and your family. We appreciate a couple minutes, and I know, like a lot of people in this area, you'll be tuned into the GLI this weekend and an interested observer as to what happens at Joe Louis Arena.
The GLI and beat TCU.
Doesn't get any better than that, right?
Exactly.
All right, Nate, we appreciate a couple minutes. Happy New Year, buddy.
Thanks, Jeremy. You too.
All right. Nate Ewell, Communications Director for College Hockey Incorporated, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR, talking a little hockey. And there hasn't been much hockey to talk about so far this year, especially with the lockout and things that are going on in the NHL. And the Michigan State team off to a bit of a slow start, but they did win their last game, and hoping that they can help kind of propel them through this GLI. And again, they will take care of, or they will face Western Michigan tomorrow afternoon in the semifinals down at Joe Louis Arena. That'll be game number one. And you can see all four games in the GLI on Fox Sports Detroit. In years past, they haven't been able to televise all the games, but with no NHL this year, that's freed up a little bit of extra space on the network, and they have a time slot. So you'll be seeing all four games this year of the GLI on Fox Sports Detroit. All right, as we mentioned earlier in today's program, Michigan State sophomore Brandon Kearney has decided to transfer from the Michigan State basketball program. He came back after Christmas break, sat down with Tom Izzo, and really expressed his displeasure with his role on this team, and at that point told Coach Izzo that he was interested in transferring. And after some discussions, Tom Izzo has granted that request, and Brandon Kearney will be free to transfer wherever he would like to go. Again, he was playing 17 minutes a game. And a lot of times when you see guys who want to leave and go to a different school, you know, a majority of the reasoning is because of lack of playing time. Well, again, we're talking about just a sophomore, so he's coming off the bench and playing those 17 minutes, getting some time. And as I mentioned, talking to Steve Grinzel, I really think he had a chance to play 20, maybe 23 minutes a game just because of the way he plays defense, and he would be somebody who could come on the floor late in a game and be able to help Michigan State, especially on the defensive end, and be able to give them some help on that end of the floor. But that will certainly not take place now, as Brandon Kearney has decided to transfer and will no longer be with the Michigan State program. All right, we'll be open line here until 2 o'clock if you want to join us here on Sports Talk on WKAR. Again, I'm Jeremy Sampson from WILX-TV, filling in today for Earl Robinson, and we invite you to give us a call today, and you can do so by dialing 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or toll free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. You can also send me a tweet. We're also following those. At Jeremy WILX is my Twitter handle, so you can certainly send me any kind of tweets, and we'll read those on the air as we get closer to 2 o'clock here, and we can certainly have any kind of discussion that you would like on Twitter as well, and get a little interactive that way as we get a little closer to the 2 o'clock hour. But we invite you to stay tuned for more sports talk after we take this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
You're going to make New Year's resolutions, but how many are you going to keep? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for the psychology of New Year's resolutions. Plus, a Renaissance man who dabbled in magnetism and music, optics and geology. Too bad he got so many things wrong. That's all on Science Friday from NPR.
All right, that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR.
A winter weather advisory remains in effect through 6 a.m. Saturday morning, and we're expecting about an inch of snow today with a high around 29 degrees. An inch or less of snow tonight with lows in the lower 20s. On Saturday, cloudy, a good chance of light snow and highs in the 20s. The outlook for Sunday, partly sunny skies with highs in the upper 20s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. Jeremy Sampson in today for Earl Robinson. And again, you can reach us the rest of today's program. We are open line for the last 20 minutes of today's show. And you can do so at 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR or toll free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR. 870. When you do dial those numbers, you will reach Alex, who is on the other side of the glass. And my apologies, Alex, for not mentioning you prior to this. We had that breaking news today with Brandon Kearney. We had a couple of guests, and it was like, you know, trying to jump into things big time. Yes, when people do call in, Alex is on the other side of the glass, and he'd be more than willing to talk to you. I know you're a keen observer of Michigan State football and basketball. Is this Kearney decision surprising you as much as it surprised Coach Izzo and I think the rest of us today?
Oh, absolutely, Jeremy. I think the bigger surprise and maybe more of the bigger question is what is going to happen with the rest of the lineup? Like you said, this could be the potential playing time that Russell Byrd has been waiting for. But at the same time, this could call up on some of the guys that really haven't gotten much into the game. Yeah, Trice has played quite a bit, but not necessarily 20 to 25 minutes a game. I mean, that's just one guy in particular that could get a lot of playing time and maybe move Appling up to maybe the two spot.
Well, I think in watching today's practice, and we got a chance to watch about the last 20, 25 minutes, you know, I was talking with Matt Larson about this from Michigan State. You know, we're supposed to be impartial as journalists, and we're supposed to, you know, call it down the middle. I've gotten a chance to know Russell Byrd away from basketball a little bit. I know what he stands for, know what he's been through with those foot surgeries, and I think they're a lot more intensive than a lot of people know about. And I'm kind of rooting for the kid a little bit. I mean, I see a lot of the stress. I see a lot of the pressure on him. He's a perfectionist. He wants to do well. He's a shooter. Okay, he's not a great defender. He's getting better at that, but he's a shooter. And he's a shooter, as many people know, shooters go by confidence. And when shooters are confident, they're all good. And right now, his confidence is not at the level where it should be. You can see it in his body language. If he misses one, he puts his head down right away. You know, he's a guy who can fill a void. We had Graham Couch on you know, a couple days ago, and he said the one thing, and I agree with him, the one thing this team is missing is a guy who can come in and make three-point shots. And I think Travis Trice is the team's best three-point shooter. I mean, I just think the kid's got a great shot. Gary Harris has been able to come in, knock down some shots. He didn't shoot it well right after that injury, but that's to be expected. But if they could have a guy like Byrd come in, stretch defenses, because you do see more teams playing a zone against Michigan State. They worked on that today at the end of practice. They worked on their zone offense. So if you can see a guy who could come in and stretch that defense like Byrd, and he did shoot it well today in practice. I mean, he really did. And he probably made 8 of the 10 shots I saw him take as they were going through, you know, their zone offense work. It's just, I would like, you can't give a kid confidence. You know, you can give him a lot of things, but you can't give him confidence. He's got to kind of earn that by his play. And in a way, I'm kind of rooting for him. I mean, if you've seen any of the things on Twitter, and that's the one thing where, you know, I'm a fan of Twitter. I use it for informational purposes for work. I use it for a lot of different things. But when I see a lot of the negative things that have been said about Russell Byrd on Twitter, you know, it stings. I know it stings for him. You know, I know he sees it. I know he hears about it. And those people who are writing those things, I hope they realize that when they're sending them, that the kid does see it and it does affect him. So he's one guy off the top of my head. Now, he's not going to chew up all of those 17 minutes. But I think, you know, he's somebody, you know, who Michigan State and Tom Izzo are going to now need to count on for filling some of that void. The other thing that that does is it allows Tom Izzo to bring Brandon Dawson out of the four, play him a little bit more at the three. Now, we saw early in the year that the Knicks and Payne experience was not a good one. Okay, but in the Texas game, they played a lot together in the second half, and they played well together. So, you know, at times, I think you're going to see some of that. You're going to see those two guys in the game together. They're going to be able to play off each other, bring Dawson out to the three, which is really a little bit more of his natural position on the wing, as that knee gets a little better. And Tom Izzo talked about that. As you get into January, you're going to be seeing a little bit more of the old Brandon Dawson physically, with some of the things that he can do, although it's clearly amazing what he's doing right now. I mean, nobody thought he would be at the position he's at. But as Tom Izzo likes to point out, that he has to remind himself that he's not all the way back yet. And there are still things that Brandon can do to kind of get himself back in. But I see that shift happening a little bit. And, you know, could be, you know, some more minutes for Trice, we talked about that. You know, Denzel Valentine could see a little bit of an increase as well. And I think that Steve brought up a good point that in a sick kind of twisted way, this is helping Tom Izzo because he does not like to play 9-10 guys. And he was having trouble paring down that rotation. You know, Bird had kind of been the odd man out a little bit and wasn't playing much. Costello, I think he can do a lot of good things on the interior. He can rebound, not going to score a lot for you, but he's going to put himself in positions where if he can score, he will. I just, you know, I see this in a way helping pare things down for Tom Izzo and allowing him to get different guys a little bit more minutes. And, you know, it's always a difficult thing to do when you have a lot of guys and you want to play them is to try and pare it down. But that's something he can do. But for me, it's looking at Russell Bird and to see how he kind of takes advantage of this opportunity because that's pretty much what it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You made some great points. Something to add on Bird. Remember, this is a guy who was Indiana's first ever All-Star coming out of his high school. So when it comes to, yeah, putting his head down after a missed shot or not necessarily the best play, you know, that's not the kind of guy that Russell Bird can be. And I think it's not really the guy that he knows he can be because this is a guy that averaged a double-double his senior year. This is the guy that went to the 2009 NBA Players Top 100 camp and made 18 of 26 from three-point range. I mean, this is a guy that not necessarily is only good in practice because he proved himself throughout his high school career that he can go into a game, go into a school where he is the only playmaker on that team and really establish a role for himself. So like you said, yes, a lot is riding on Bird. You're rooting for him a little bit. I definitely see that because given his experience, I think you, Jeremy, also know that it is in him to succeed. And even back to the point you made about Nixon Payne, how that really didn't work out. And another thing to add was that was probably Nix's best game so far this season. And is he going to really do that every single game? Probably not. And that's also another thing to look at.
Well, and I think what it shows, Derek, is he's capable of doing that each and every night. Whether he does it or not, you know, is a completely different thing, but it shows that he is capable of playing that way. He's not going to score 25 points every night. You know, if he does do that, I mean, that's great for Michigan State, but that's certainly, I don't think, something you can expect to happen each and every night. All right, let's give you those phone numbers one more time here on Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR. Jeremy Sampson in today for Earl Robinson. We've got about 11 minutes left in today's show, and you can join us by dialing 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can reach us toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR. 870. Let's give you a couple of quick notes before we go out to the phone lines about this Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. The Associated Press coming out with a couple of key notes about tomorrow night's game. They say, what's at stake? Both teams trying to build momentum for next season after limping down the stretch in 2012. TCU opened the season with four straight wins in its first season in the Big 12 before losing 4 of 6, while the Spartans had a similar finish after opening their season 4-2. One of the key matchups should be TCU's excellent run defense, Steve talked about, against Michigan State running back Le'Veon Bell. The Horned Frogs had the nation's 10th best rushing defense during the regular season, allowing 103.92 yards per game, but haven't seen many backs like Bell, the junior, third nationally with 147.3 yards per game. He rushed for 1,600. 48 yards. That's the second most in a single season in Michigan State history. A couple of guys they say to look out for, TCU quarterback Trayvon Boykin. The team appeared to be in trouble with starter Casey Patchell when he was suspended after being arrested on drunken driving charges and then later left the program. But Boykin, a redshirt freshman, threw three interceptions in his first game but bounced back with four TD passes the next week against Baylor. He threw for over 1,800 yards on the season with 15 touchdowns. For Michigan State, a player to watch would be defensive end William Golston, the Spartans' fifth nationally in points allowed, 16.3 per game. Golston, a big part of their success, though he's been criticized for being a borderline dirty player. I don't know about that. I mean, there was the couple instances last year, but this year that has not been the case. If anything, it's been more of his inconsistent play than anything else. He's 6'7", 278 pounds, and can be a disruptive force. A couple of other facts and figures. TCU played more true freshmen, 16, than it has scholarship seniors, 11, and tied Texas for the most true freshmen played in the nation. Michigan State's in its sixth straight bowl game and eighth since 2001. The Horned Frogs have appeared in a bowl game for a school record eighth straight season and 11 in the past 12. The Spartans had the nation's fifth toughest schedule and were one of three teams to play three ranked opponents before October 1st. TCU has the nation's third longest streak without being shut out at 254 games. So that's a couple of news and notes as we get ready for tomorrow night's Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. But let's go out to the phone lines and on line one, welcome in Michael from Saginaw. Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Jeremy Sampson. I just want to wish everybody a belated Merry Christmas, might be late, and happy 2013.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Happy New Year to you, too.
What I have to ask you is, when Coach Itchell look at his players and everything, he doesn't have a set rotation like North Carolina. Do they have North Carolina, like they have eight people, they usually play eight players, they have a starting course, and then they have three players come off the bench. That's one thing I do like about Coach Izzo. He doesn't have a set rotation. He rotates his players on the ability to what their talents and capabilities are. So I like that really about Izzo. But what I want to say this about Michigan State program, and I'm really proud of your program going up to Mount Pleasant to play Central Michigan football, and they going to Oakland, you know, go to a university that usually Division One schools in basketball that don't have a big time school play at their campus. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, that's certainly been nice for them for sure.
Okay, and here's one more question: since Brandon Kearney is transferred, what could a coach, if you are a coach of a Division One program, and it's like, well, certain coaches on Division One teams run players off during the end of the year, even though they don't like to admit it. What you think about the basketball transfer rules? I'll take it off the air. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, Michael, we appreciate your thoughts today from Saginaw. I don't really have a ton of thoughts on the basketball transfer rule, and part of that is because nothing that I say today is going to help change it, whether I like it or not. I mean, it kind of is what it is. The players know what it is when they sign that letter of intent. We had a young man here from Okemos High School, Chris Harrison Dox, who signed a letter of intent with Butler. He went to Butler for the part of the first semester, went through a couple of their exhibition games and decided that wasn't the place for him, and he's now going to Western Kentucky. So, I mean, these guys know what they're getting into when they sign on the dotted line. That's why when you make this decision, you need to make sure you're making the best decision for you. You know, I thought Brandon Kearney was going to maybe redshirt his freshman year just because of his build. He was a little bit skinnier, but he showed through his freshman year he could play at this level. He could defend, he could shoot it, he could slash. I think, you know, reading between the lines of what Coach Izzo said today, Kearney wants to go to a place where he's going to be more the man. And I'm sure that there are some places, maybe in-state, maybe out of state, that are nearby here in the Midwest and could be places where he thinks he could go and be a little bit more of a feature guy in the offense. And to me, I think he wanted to be much more of a leading role type of guy than a role player at a place like Michigan State. So, you know, there's not a lot we can do to change the rules and what they are. They are what they are. One thing that Tom Izzo did say today was that may change a little bit how he looks at this year for recruiting. You know, because they only had one scholarship available for this year, and you know, things did not work out a couple weeks ago in Chicago. So that allowed Tom Izzo. This will allow Tom Izzo to maybe bring somebody else in this class when maybe he was going to bank that one scholarship for next year to the 2013 class and kind of see what was going on there. All right, let's talk to Bruce, who's on line one. He's in Lansing. Good morning or good afternoon, Bruce. How are you? Bruce, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's going on today, sir?
Yeah, I was thinking about the transfer of Brandon Kearney.
Yes.
And I know a lot of times it looks like Tom gets frustrated with Denzel Valentine. He gets in the doghouse, so I think he's probably going to have to ride with him a little bit longer. But my question to you is, since you were at practice today, I know they're redshirting Kaminsky, I think is his name.
Kenny Kaminsky, yes.
Is he hurt or is he practicing?
He had an injury. He's still not really working out. So I don't think we'll see Tom take the redshirt off of him.
Okay, and have you heard of anybody that, since Tom mentioned that, I know he can't talk about it, but...
Right.
Have you heard of anybody that he may be looking at now as far as bringing in somebody for next year?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I haven't, to be honest with you. I mean, I think, you know, now you're looking at having an extra scholarship and maybe being able to fill a need if you want to maybe bring in a big guy or maybe a junior college transfer if there is somebody who's out there and available. But here's the thing about Tom Izzo. He's not just going to go get a player to go get a player because he has to. You know, now this gives him an extra scholarship to play with that he can bank for next year and does give him some options. So whatever decision he decides to make, I think we all know it'll be for the betterment of the program. He's not just going to go get a guy because he feels like he needs to put one player in the class, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I don't know, do you know the rule on, I know he's got two walk-ons on the team, can he give that scholarship to one of those guys for the remainder of the season?
Good question on the remainder of the season. I'd have to ask him about that. But that is a good question. I think he would be able to do that if he wanted to.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Bruce, we appreciate it. Let's go quickly north of the border and talk with Jody, who's in Toronto. Hi, Jody, how are you? We got a couple minutes left in the show.
All right, couple things. You know, Kearney was one of four or five guys who were about 6'5", about 190, 180, you know. So
yep.
There's kind of a log jam at that position, you know, with Denzel, Kearney, Kearney, Dawson, all those guys. You know, but also I want to say at the beginning of the season, I kind of had a feeling that maybe Kearney would end up either at Eastern or Iowa State.
Well, Iowa State obviously has plucked a couple of guys.
You know, let's be honest. You know, big fellas there from, you know, they played high school with Percy Gibson.
Yep.
And, you know, and Cornell was there from, you know, who's connected with the city. And also, you know, I thought maybe First Eastern because, you know, Murphy was down there and he could go down to Eastern and be the man, you know, because, you know, Mac School, he has the big fellas, you know, the two big fellas, one from Arkansas that transferred in and big fella from Syracuse that Riley that transferred in. So, you know, would give him two bigs to work with down there. So, you know, not that I'm, you know, I have access to any of that info, but I knew he wanted to play with Percy Gibson, you know, coming out of his high school
right.
Teammate thought he was going to play here.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, hey, you know, it happens. You lose kids and, you know, you keep going and, you know, it does create some time. And Bird just has to hit shots. I mean, you
right.
know, it's not, you know, it gets down on yourself. Because I remember Berkovich, you know, Michael could shoot like crazy, but you know he'd get his head down, and you know, and sometimes would, you know, could continue to hit those shots, you know. So if you're a shooter, you know, you just got to have confidence to step up and shoot.
All right, Jody, we appreciate it. We got to run, but happy New Year to you, sir.
All right,
Jody from Toronto. It always happens. Those last couple of minutes, Alex. Everybody wants to get in the last couple of minutes. It always happens that way. All right. I'm Jeremy Sampson from WILX TV. We invite you to watch WILX tonight. We'll have all your updates on Brandon Kearney and everything else going on with Michigan State out in the bowl game. Alex, great job as always. We want to thank Steve Grinzel for being a part of today's program from MSUSpartans.com and Nate Ewell from College Hockey Incorporated. From Michigan State University, this is AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
From NPR. Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.